There is a warrior deep in the heart of every man. Society tells men to be soft and stay in line. The church tells men to be nice and quiet. But Jesus calls men into a dangerous adventure, an epic battle. Last week, we talked to Joseph Washburn, a retired Green Beret Bronze Star recipient, about Christians joining the military. Joseph mentioned one of his personal heroes, Desmond Doss, a conscientious objector from World War II, who single-handedly saved over 75 men at Hacksaw Ridge in Okinawa. Maybe you've seen the Mel Gibson movie. Well, before reaching combat, Doss, a Seventh-day Adventist, stood firm on several beliefs. He would not work or train on the Sabbath, he would not compromise his faith, and he would not carry a gun. Doss was bullied by his peers and superior officers. He suffered immense pressure to conform and change, but he stood his ground and was finally allowed to deploy with his unit. In Okinawa, after scaling a cliff and encountering withering Japanese fire, Doss and the other Americans were ordered to retreat. Doss refused, and all alone, crawling through intense enemy fire, he dragged every wounded man he found to the edge of this cliff and lowered them down with a rope. Later, Doss said he was praying the whole time, "Lord, please help me get just one more." For his selfless and heroic actions that day, Desmond Doss, the conscientious cooperator, as he liked to be called, earned our nation's highest tribute, the Medal of Honor. Let's start today's show with Joseph sharing his perspective on Desmond Doss.
We oftentimes look at Desmond Doss as a champion for the conscientious objector model. We really strongly emphasize what he didn't do. You know, he did not work on the Sabbath. He did not carry a gun. But we completely miss the boat on what he did do. What he did do was he took a stand for good over evil. He had a sense of duty that God had put on his heart, and he didn't give up in the face of adversity. But if he had listened to that advice, like, no, you can't be here, shouldn't be here, you're doing the wrong thing. Think about thousands of lives that would have been different today. I don't even know how many people wouldn't be here today if he had not done what he did. And so for me, his legacy is more about what he did than what he didn't do. It's less about the fact that he didn't work on Sabbath and he didn't carry a gun. And it's more about the fact that he put his life on the line for other people because he knew Jesus and because Jesus was deeply embedded in his heart. He had the no excuses mindset. There was no excuse that was going to keep him from being there on that front line and serving his fellow man. It didn't matter that he didn't have a gun or anything else. He didn't make excuses. And Desmond Doss had answered the ultimate question, is Jesus enough? And I think that question is important because regardless of what the outcome of your decisions are, to join the service, to not join the service, to be something or nothing for God, at the end of the day, all you're left with is your relationship with God. And is Jesus enough? And Desmond Doss answered that question. He said, yes, Jesus is enough. And because Jesus is enough, I can do these things. That's especially what we're trying to capture at No Excuses, is that it's not about what you don't do. You can refrain from all kinds of things, but what are you going to commit your life to?
I love your perspective on how Doss is a hero for what he did and not what he didn't do, because I think Jesus is calling Christian men into lives of action. We should be defined by what we do, not by the things we don't do, and that's just really good. So one of the things Doss did do was he honored the fourth commandment by keeping the Sabbath holy. Now I know now when Adventists join the military, each one has to make a decision in his own heart or in her own heart about what are they going to do on Sabbath. As an Adventist, how did you handle that issue?
I did ask for Sabbaths off. It didn't become such an issue for maybe a year or even two. After I'd gone through selection, I went through Special Forces Assessment selection after I became a Christian, moved back to the United States because I was stationed in Germany at that time. And I did have to do some training stuff on Saturdays through the qualification course. But nothing I found was really directly in conflict with my belief. You know, you see a lot of pastors doing work on Sabbath, a lot of doctors and nurses and firefighters, EMS, law enforcement. They do some training stuff on Sabbath. We don't ask all those people to take those days off either. What they do with that and the money that they earn on those days, that's up to them. And You know, for me, I took a position where I would try and tithe that extra money. I actually figured out what my daily wage was. And on those days that I did have to work on Saturdays, I tithed that extra money as a recognition that I was in a position that was almost untenable. But for a long time, I didn't have an issue with it. Like Chad Lambie, my friend Chad Lambie, he didn't have much of an issue with it ever either. It's actually a lot less of an issue than a lot of people would believe. And we have plenty of good examples of people who stood their ground and were able to stay true to that.
So my grandpa was drafted in World War II, and he really, really wanted to be a paratrooper. He wanted to be, you know, in the 101st. And the church at that time was very strong, saying you can only be a conscientious objector. So he became a surge tech, kind of not a medic on the front lines. He worked in the surgery. And when after the war, he came back and was a doctor. And he's told me several times that he really believes that because he did what the church wanted him to do, even though he didn't want to do it, he feels like he survived. Because so, like, the percentage of men in the paratrooping services who didn't make it through the war is very, very high. But I always felt like he kind of missed out. Like he wished he had been a part of that service. Like he wanted to do the special forces thing, but he did the right thing more out of duty than desire. How do you balance the whole idea of like duty, what you should be doing, and then desire, what you feel like your heart's calling you to do?
The heart's call is often an emotionally charged response, and our emotions will lie to us all the time. I even have that tattooed on my chest that says, follow your heart's desires. And it's also with the Oregon State motto, Alice Volat Propis, she flies with her own wings. I see the wisdom in a multitude of counselors. And I believe God gave us the organization and structure of the church for a reason. And there are countless examples. Your grandfather's one of them, where people's lives have been improved and bettered and saved even because of that corporate decision. You know, like as a people, denominated people, we are going to take a stand on this issue, and this is how we are going to move forward as a people. A sense of duty can also become chains. You know, I think of Jonathan and his armor bearer when they went off by themselves. They had a duty. Jonathan had a duty to his father, who was the king. Right. And yet he had a call in his heart. He said, Lord, if this is, you know, something that you'll bless, make this happen. It happened. And he and that armor bearer went up there and they did something that was amazing that turned the tides. Right. And so occasionally God calls us out of that corporate quagmire, in a sense, to do something different. But a lot of times, that corporate mindset, that sense of duty to the greater, can be really helpful. So is there a balance? Again, I don't know. But that's again where the grace comes back into play. But I think a lot of us, especially in our culture right now, we're just following our hearts, and what we're really doing is following our ungodly desires, and we're doing what we want to do, and not what's best for us and those around us.
If a young Christian or young Adventist joined the military today, what challenges would he face in regards to his faith?
Today, there's even more challenges than there was before, especially with mandatory vaccines. And I don't want to make this a statement about or, you know, for or against those, but that is calling people's convictions to be stood on. The Sabbath is obviously one that will arise, but I can't presume to understand what each young person's faith experience looks like. Nor can I presume to understand exactly what they're feeling convicted upon. And so I don't know what all struggles that they're going to have, but I can tell you they're going to be tested, and they're going to be called upon to stand their ground for what they believe unequivocally. That there's no doubt. And so going into a situation like that, I think you really need to know where you stand on a lot of issues that you maybe didn't take the time to think through before.
Wow, that really makes me think of Daniel. You know, they're captured in Jerusalem, they're taken to Babylon, and they're brought to the king's table, and here's all this amazing food that's sacrificed to idols, and it's unclean, and I'm sure there was lots of things there that were tempting, but really unhealthy. And because Daniel made the decision beforehand, he and his friends were able to stand strong. So before someone joins the military, they really have to take a deep, soul-searching look into what they believe is right or wrong. And that's when you get into this crazy gray area. So many people disagree on what's right, what's wrong, what a Christian should do, what a Christian shouldn't do. And when you get into the military, because it's such a structured environment, you really have to look into these issues on kind of a deeper level than regular civilians would. So Joseph, for you, as you look at a lot of these gray issues, like how do you decide what's right or what's wrong? How do you cut through the gray and find the right way to live?
You need to pray about it a lot. I think one of the things that's really important is not assuming that what's right for someone else has to be exactly right for you. I believe that in deciding what's right for me and my family is more about seeking out the Lord's will than it is about executing an action plan. This is just my personal experience, because it's that searching scriptures, searching my own heart, bearing my heart to God and allowing him to examine that. That's what that process is really about to me. Whatever you do in training physically, try and connect that with spiritual principles as much as you possibly can, because that's what we're trying to do at No Excuses. And No Excuses, we're not teaching you how to be on a fire team, you know, doing battle drills and clearing houses and stuff like that. It's about tying these spiritual principles with the physical realities that we live in. I have to constantly guard against my worldly desires. And I think that's the best part of all of that, is recognizing that this world forces me back on my knees in front of my Savior, Jesus Christ, who allows me with grace to experiment different things.
And I love what you're saying there, because right now in society, wherever you fall on the political spectrum, the other people are just dead wrong. And when someone's wrong, it's like they're morally inferior. And what you're saying here is, you know, the way you decide what's right and wrong for you is through prayer. And even if we come to different responses, I believe what God's most concerned with is our heart. Is our heart searching for truth? Is our heart surrendered? Is our heart full of love for others? Because even if we arrive at the right answer, if our heart's not in it, then we could be like the Pharisees who killed Jesus, but then brought him down so they could keep the fourth commandment and keep Sabbath holy. Like, it's crazy.
Gandhi and Dr. King are two of my biggest heroes, and those guys championed the nonviolent direct action. And I love what they did, especially Dr. King's perspective. You can read about it in his letter to from the Birmingham jail, where he talks about undergoing a process of purification before they engaged in nonviolent direct action. And I think that that is so important, and we can learn so much from revisiting that and evaluating that and making that a practice in our own lives, because not carrying a weapon and not getting involved in war doesn't make you uninvolved. You can still be involved and do nonviolent direct action stuff. And I think that's a legacy of fighting for a cause that's worth emulating. And, you know, those were men of action. And I believe that God put that action in their hearts. When you realize you have a relationship with God that no one else can take, like Desmond did, the things that you can do for God are amazing, because it's not about you, it's about God.
Well, Joseph, it's been a privilege to have you on the show. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I know the audience has loved hearing your perspective as well. And just want to give a shout out to the No Excuses Project. There's still space. Go to noexcuses3.com and sign up today. That's noexcuses3.com and sign up today. I've signed up, and, you know, I'm a little nervous, but I'm excited at the same time. So I can't wait to meet you in person, Joseph, and experience the No Excuses Project for myself.
Yeah, thank you, Grant. It's a great opportunity today, and I look forward to seeing you soon, too. Take care.
And to everyone who's listening out there, God bless you, and remember to follow Jesus, the blueprint for men.